The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Best odds guaranteed, available the day before racing on singles, multiples, online and in shop. Time to switch? Boyle Sports. This is betting.
Hi there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 28th of March. This week I'm joined by Robbie Wilders and Chris Cook. We're without Leon Blanche, but hopefully he'll be back next week. And we're going to look back on the start of the flat season. The flat was back at Doncaster with the Lincoln, also good listed racing there. And also a potential Royal Ascot Juvenile won the Brocklesby in scintillating style. Competitive action at Kempton, and also we're going to be turning our eyes to the Middle East and World Cup night in Dubai. Japanese dominating there again, but some good performances from British and Irish trained horses. So that's coming your way in the next 40 minutes or so. Let's start off with that juvenile I mentioned, though. And that horse was Persian Force in the SBK Brocklesby Condition Stakes. The Last Lion, who sadly actually lost his life at Kempton over the weekend, won a Group 1 after winning this race a couple of years ago. And Persian Force looked very, very good. It's early days, Robbie, but do you think he has what it takes to be a Royal Ascot Juvenile?
Very much so, yeah. As you say, it is early days, but I can't remember a Brocklesby one that impressively for quite some time. He's obviously a full brother to Gubbas, who progressed into finishing fifth in a Group 1 early in the season, and there's no reason why he can't go that far. We're gonna have to wait and see how the form works out, but he could only beat who was in front of him, and he did it very easily. So yeah, there's no reason why he won't go on and be a big player in something like the Norfolk Stakes.
And Chris, this was just an example, the latest piece of evidence that Ammo Racing are really going to be a huge force in the coming years when it comes to ownership. And surprisingly, a first win in this race for Richard Hannon as well, given the juvenile riches he's had at his disposal for some time now.
Yes, and I even think of him as a trainer who can get his horses, you know, ready for this time of year. But so it is kind of surprising to reflect on that. It's a sort of Bill Turner type race, isn't it, the Brocklesby? There's a few other trainers that we associate more closely with this race. But I mean, it's one where if you're a fan of flat racing on turf, you know, this race really was the perfect way to start. It really gets the juices flowing, you know, because it's such an impressive performance from Persian Force, you know, and he's a flashy chestnut with a big looking stride, and he just coasted through that race and pulled clear. And by the time he gets to the line, there isn't another horse in shot. I looked it up just to see when was the last time a horse won the Brocklesby by that far, because, you know, it's only a 5 furlong race and a bunch of immature 2-year-olds. You know, you'd think unless you get proper soft ground, you wouldn't have a wide winning margin. So the last one was Mix Your Man, who won by 5 lengths 9 years ago. And reasonably positive omens you could take from that, because he, I think he won again a week later, and then the rest of the year was a bit quiet. He might have had a setback of some kind, but he won a listed race at Ascot the next year and then moved on to Hong Kong eventually and won at least 3 races out there. Racking up loads of prize money. Not especially wonderful for European racing that, you know, a talent like that would be lost. But as we know, it happens. Hopefully it won't happen with Persian Force. I mean, you would think he's going to be lighting up the early part of the season, and he's got to be a cert to be in something good at Royal Ascot, doesn't he?
I think so. I can imagine he'd be very popular among listeners when those markets do emerge. Now, the Camage Trophy Stakes, again sponsored by SBK, there was a little bit of an upset with Volatile Analyst getting the better of the 7-4 favourite Diligent Harry in a driving finish. These are sort of the top, but not the very top of our sprinters in this country, Chris. I mean, how impressed were you by the winner? Because he's always been a bit quirky, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think the hood going on at the end of last year made a difference, didn't it? You certainly, if you just took his record by itself, you would think that he immediately beat a big field in quite a valuable sprint handicap at York back in October when it was fitted. And he's 3 from 6 since then, including the race on Saturday. You were looking at this race beforehand thinking it sort of set up nicely for Diligent Harry, a sort of promising, improving young sprinter. You know, from the Clive Cox yard, and he was sent off favourite. But I think probably he's run a fair race, and Volatile Analyst is just marginally better. you know, finishing to good effect up the middle of the track, down in trip from some of the races that he's been running. 12-1, maybe there's an aspect of, you know, Keith Cliptoe leash horses being underrated versus a more high profile operation like Clive Cox. You wouldn't come away from this thinking, you know, British sprinting is in tremendous shape. So, I mean, hopefully there are some other good ones knocking around out there. But a horse like Garus, he ran out of running room, didn't he, on the rail in the closing stages. And I guess a few of these horses are really just starting their season.
Ross Orion enjoyed a treble on Town Moor on Saturday with Persian Force, Arthur's Realm, and latterly Chindit, the very short price favourite in the SBK Doncaster Miles Stakes. That was a bit of a formality, Robbie, but he's clearly a jockey who's going to have a huge season. I think so anyway. Do you have any favourite jockeys, or is that not an area that you particularly look at when you're looking forward to backing horses?
No, not massively. I'm more interested in jockey strike rates, to be honest. And I know Rosser comes out very good in that regard. I thought he did well on Chindit. I mean, Chindit was very keen in the early part of the race. I was on Racing Post Live and he went out to about 4.5 on the exchange. Considering he was odds on, that was quite a marked drift. But in the end, he actually won it like an odds on shot should. Just feel like he's probably going to fall short of Group 1 level this season, Chindit. But there are a lot of good sort of Group 2 races he can go well in. And there's a nice campaign for him. But whether he's going to be up to races like the Lockinge, I'm not so sure. But a very good horse for the Hannans to have.
Yeah, and I think that yard in particular, they won't be afraid to drop him back to 7 furlongs, run him in races like the Hungerford and the Lennox, Chris. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's probably going to be about his level, isn't it? You're talking about Group 2 races. He seemed to show last year he wasn't quite up to top class. Maybe he has taken a step forward, but we wouldn't have seen it in Saturday's race, which, you know, he really had to be winning from his rating relative to the others. And, you know, Royal Champion is basically completely failed to run his race. We don't know why, but that sort of turned it into a three-runner affair. And yeah, I thought even Boozler was slightly disappointing. So, I mean, it's sort of fallen into Chindit's lap, really. There's talk about the Lockinge. He run into some good horses there. You'd think he'd be up against it, but, I mean, that'll be his chance to show if he really has improved relative to the horse we saw last year. He was sort of fifth in the Guineas and then again at Royal Ascot behind Poetic Flair. Just on Rosser there, I mean, I do like him as a jockey. I think this is an important year for him. He was given lots of good chances last year, I think largely as a result of the link-up with the owner, Ammo Racing. And, you know, ended up with easily his most winners ever, most prize money, you know, lots of group races. And I think an experience like that would, you know, it really builds a jockey's experience and his confidence as well. And his strike rate's nicely up this season. Again, it has a lot to do with opportunity. But I think, you know, he's that young, promising, talented jockey who's sort of beginning to put it all together because of the opportunities that he's had. So we'll see how he gets on. But I think, you know, the future's pretty bright for him.
I agree. And on a, you know, just as much talent, but on a slightly different side of a spectrum, Sylvester D'Souza. Now, not with King Power Racing. Well, it doesn't matter so far, does it? Because he scoped the big race, the SBK Lincoln, with Johan. Mick Shannon, again, is a trainer who's slightly gone about his business in an unheralded way for the last couple of years. But this was a welcome winner for their team. Saleem, who was quite well fancied in the market, was second. A good run from Rogue Bear from the rear of the field in third. And then William Haggis, the first of his lot, completing the race. Irish Admiral, 22-1 shot, was fourth. Modern News, he ran okay in seventh. He was well fancied. And Mujtabar, who was sent off the 3-1 favourite, also for the Haggis team, was in 12th. How do you analyse a race like the Lincoln, Chris? Do you think draw was crucial? Obviously, from 4 and 3, the first two, one was in fourth. But 19, as I say, I think you can mark up Rogue Bear.
Yeah, I think the first thing to say about the Lincoln was I was pretty glad I didn't have a major feel about the race beforehand, didn't get involved from a punting perspective. It's so hard to analyse the draw, isn't it? Because, OK, it does look from the outcome as though a low draw was handy against the far rail. But it's the only race on the day where really you're getting that getting anything in the way of clues, because the consolation race only attracted 8 runners, which is worrying in itself.
Why do you think that was? There was a lot of talk about sort of small fields and alarm bells ringing. Why is that?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's a decent chunk of prize money, isn't it? But I suppose nobody's really aiming at a consolation race, are they? This is sort of the race at this stage of the season anyway that you land in if you didn't quite make the cut for the Lincoln. So maybe that's part of it. You know, when you get later in the season, consolation races for the Ergo Cup, for example, there are 2, you know, you probably have a good idea of what ratings bracket your horse is in and which of those you might end up in. So you could be aiming at those races, whereas maybe just now it's too early in the season for horses to be ready. But I mean, it's a decent chunk of prize money that's sitting there if you have the right horse. I don't know. I don't quite know how to explain it. There must be a stack of horses that could have run. And, you know, had their trainers been thinking of along those lines. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, you know, you can get one-offs, can't you? Maybe it's just one of those things. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Johan is interesting because I think he was going to go for the listed race, wasn't he? He was going for the Doncaster Mile until they looked at the entries and saw Chindit sitting there with his 112 rating and thought, rather than take him on at level weights, let's try the handicap, and it's worked out beautifully. And you were talking about the draw, so winners come from 4, the second from 3, and the fourth from 1. But they were all sort of to the 4 early on as well, and you know it could have been that worked out well for them, that it was a pace bias rather than a draw bias going on. I definitely think Robert is one to take from the race. He's finished 3rd, having come from the other wing of the stalls. He was hampered at the start, and as a result was immediately last, and he sort of come around the other end of the field from the other principals and finished really strongly with nothing to race against for a fair way. It's quite a big run from a young horse who's got more to offer, and if he turns up in that is it the Spring Cup at Newbury, the big field handicap they have there, he's got a chance to win a decent race, I'd say. I thought there was a tremendous backhanded compliment from Mick Shannon's son, Jack, towards the winning jockey, Sylvester D'Souza. Considering, you know, Sylvester, this is an important year for him. He's a freelance again, and he's trying to sort of reestablish some connections. Jack says about him, he's a straightforward horse who lengthens and lengthens, and that's Sylvester's bag. If he can just shovel the coal on, there's no one better. It's a compliment of sorts, but I'm sure from Sylvester's perspective, he sees himself as being a slightly more rounded quote than you might imagine from that.
Yeah, you don't want to be a one-dimensional jockey, do you really? But I think we can all sort of sympathize with what he was saying, and of course he's often enjoyed great success with the Shannon team. Robbie, could you see Johan coming beforehand, and who do you think emerged from the race with the most credit?
Nah, not at all. I'd have to agree with Chris that Rogue Bear did in 3rd. As he pointed out, he was badly hampered at the start and he's poorly positioned. I mean, the first 2 were always up there throughout, and he made up a lot of late ground. He's definitely going to be on a good mark. The handicapper can't raise Rogue Bear too much. But, yeah, I mean, it's turned out to be a good piece of placing. And he was, of course, making his stable debut for Channon. So I wouldn't have too much between Johan and Chindit, to be honest. I mean, he's probably going to go up to around 110 now. I mean, that's going to put him in very much in the mix for sort of Group 3s and Group 2s. And, yeah, very good training performance to get him into a career best position on his first start for the stable.
The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Best odds guaranteed, available the day before racing on singles, multiples, online and in shop. Time to switch? Boyle Sports. This is betting.
Welcome back to this Monday Postcast. We're going over to Ireland now. And on Saturday, it was the Lodge Park Stud Irish EBF Park Express Stakes. That's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? And this race saw the return of last year's 1,000 guineas winner, Mother Earth. She was the 4-5 favourite and got the job done cosily enough. It was quite workmanlike from her. Chris, we're seeing this as a trend with Aidan O'Brien. He tends to keep his fillies and mares in training a little bit longer these days. I presume that's because he's not got to protect their stud value in the same way that he has with the colts. What did you make of this reappearance from her?
Yeah, I suppose that's right, isn't it? With a mare, you're only giving up one foal a year, aren't you, if you keep her in training? And the interesting thing about Mother Earth is, you know, she's just tough isn't she? She's run 10 times last year, and there's really no sign of her, you know, losing any of her enthusiasm. You know, her her Racing Post rating for the very last run of the year, which was in Hong Kong in the middle of December, was a match for anything that she did throughout the year, which started back on the 2nd of May last year when she won the 1,000 guineas in Newmarket, beating Saffron Beach. And she's also been over to France and won the Prix de Rothschild and loads of other good runs in between. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect any improvement from her this year, but you know, she's going to rack up plenty of prize money whether she wins or not. And I'm sure she can build on what she showed us on Saturday. You know, she's Aidan O'Brien's first winner of the year. He's you know, we're familiar with his modus operandi. He's not going to have his good horses just ready to go, or probably any of his horses just ready to go at this stage of the year. So, you know, she's only beaten Insinuendo by 3/4 of a length, which would be some way below her normal form. But I'm sure she can build on that. Aidan's left himself plenty to work on. It's just, it's exciting to have these sort of Group One standard of horses already on the track in late March, and it can get us thinking about races like the Lockinge, which it was mentioned specifically for her as a possible target.
Yeah, I think that race would suit her because she's just gritty, isn't she? I think you've got that spot on. And Robbie, Chris mentions an interesting point there about how Aidan O'Brien, often his horses aren't at fever pitch when he runs them, and he'd rather run them then get them ready for racing at home. Mother Earth, the 4-5 favourite, and she justified the odds. Last year, his horses were actually quite forward, though. So previously, that might have been a profitable punting angle to take them on first time out, but maybe not so much this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm still on board with that angle. I mean, obviously, Mother Earth got the job done, but I mean, he's only had 6 runners so far, and an 8-11 favourite got beaten, and a 9-4 favourite got beaten as well. So, I mean, it's not guaranteed that they are that far ahead of where they normally are. But yeah, I really like Mother Earth. One of my favourite horses, I think, actually. She reminds me a little bit of Magical a couple of years ago, just really consistent, always runs a race. I mean, she was on the go for nearly 8 months last season, and as Chris pointed out, ran up to her best on her final start in Hong Kong. I mean, yeah, Insinuendo isn't a Group 1 mare, but she's rated 107. Mother Earth still run really well to beat her, and that's going to put a spot on for the Lockinge. So, yeah, I could see her having another very good season.
Yeah, attitude counts for so much, doesn't it, in these horses, often is the case. Chris, I know before we move on to Maidan, you wanted to talk about the Unibet Magnolia Stakes, a listed race at Kempton. Very competitive, I thought.
Yes, it certainly was. So this went to Living Legend. You know, it was a win for the Johnson team on the day they lost the last Lion. I think they had a double on the day. Close finish and a not sort of finish that makes you think, oh, I definitely want to be taking a horse or two from that kind of blanket finish. But I thought Al Zarakan had possibilities going forward. It was Blinker's first time, and you sort of felt that he lost the chance to make the most of that when he kind of blew the start. And couldn't go forward and ended up running freely, as horses often do first-time blinkers. Finished really strongly and only beaten a nose, despite the race not panning out very well for him. He's been around a bit. He's a 5-year-old with Archie Watson, had 13 runs now. So he's not wildly unexposed, but I'd be interested in him next time. I remember Nick Morden always used to say, actually, with horses that get blinkered, it's the second run that you want to be the most interested in, because they're a bit wild the first time and then they settle down the second time and give something closer to their optimum performance. I think he's run well in difficult circumstances there. I was a bit disappointed in Fancy Man, considering it was such strong form from the time before when he was third in the Winter Derby, because he's beaten by Alan Kerr and Lord North, which, as we saw from the racing out in Maidan on Saturday, it's a very high level of form, and he was only fifth in the end. He sort of went to the front and got pestered, so I guess there's an excuse there. But you know, 6-4 favorite from a yard that was doing well elsewhere that day, that was a bit of a disappointing effort.
It was. You mentioned Lord North, and we'll talk about him in just a moment, but first, 5 of the headline races on Maidan's World Cup card went the way of the Japanese. So of those Japanese winners, Stay Foolish was one. He won the Dubai Gold Cup, a Group 2, and he beat the very short price favourite Manobo, who pulled ferociously. The two of them are going to have very bright futures, Chris, but can you see this form being reversed in future?
Yes, there's always a risk, isn't there, in forgiving horses that don't settle and pull too hard, because some of them just keep on doing it forever and ever and undercutting their ability in that way. But Manobo, yeah, he was 9-4 on, and form-wise, you'd have said that was deserved, really. You know, just a stack of ones next to his name. I guess relatively inexperienced, although he did win on Arc Weekend. And there was a big crowd there that day. And, you know, he looked pretty good on his reappearance last month. But, yeah, in the end, you know, Stay Foolish has gone past. And it might just be that, you know, we're continuing to underestimate Japanese raiders in these major international prizes. Given the results on Saturday, we've got no excuse for ever doing that again. It does appear that the level of form there now is higher than we've reckoned with, and they're just going to be perennial contenders in any of these major international flat races that they turn up for. I guess Stay Foolish was only 4-1, you know, more fancied than some of the other Japanese winners on the night. But when you've got that sort of odds on Godolphin horse running in Maidan at the beginning of the year, you just expect him to win, don't you? And in the end, he's sort of blown himself out, and Stay Foolish has sort of stayed on past him.
A pretty miserable carnival if you're part of the Godolphin team. Not a single one of the big races did they scoop. Ireland did, though. They got on the mark in the Alquaz Sprint. A case of you, 14-1, reversed form with Man of Promise from his previous run. And he looks set up for a really big season closer to home, Chris.
Yeah, a case of you. So this is the Abbey winner who's gone and got another valuable international Group 1 for Ado McGuinness and Connections. It might have been a little bit of the old draw bias going on here, because even though the section of stalls that he's come from was not against a rail, and he's had to sort of track over to the stands rail, he was drawn on that end in 16 of 16. And the third home has come from 12, and the fifth is 15, and the sixth was 14. So it does look as though Happy Romance, who's finished second from trap six, is maybe sort of overcome a bit of a draw bias there. 20-1 for the Richard Hannon team that, as we've said already, was having a blooming good weekend. And Man of Promise, only third at odds on for the Godolphin side, as you say, having a tough time.
Yeah, I must admit, I still can't get away from Naval Crown. I think he will win a big race over six furlongs soon. And again, he was against the draw bias. Robbie, talk to us about the Dubai turf. Lord North went back to back, but he shared honours with the Japanese horse Panther Lassa, a strong front-running contender. Vindegaard in third made it a cracking finish. I think this is one of the best finishes I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely. It looked like a three-way dead heat when I looked on the telly. I can't believe Lord North's actually got there from where he came from. It's good to see him back. I know he was off all of last season after he won this, and a profitable season awaits. But, I mean, with the two Japanese horses there, with Lord North very close up, and obviously four other winners on the card, I think we're all going to have to start putting a lot more work in and studying this Japanese form. And from a sort of British perspective, it seems quite encouraging that there was a lot of talk about some of these horses going to Royal Ascot coming up. And we want to see these overseas horses coming to enhance our fields. So, yeah, good luck to the Japanese. And I'll be watching back a lot more races from Tokyo and places like that from now on.
I think that's sound advice. Let's move on to the Shima Classic. It was won by Shariar. Quite a messy race in behind. Yabir, the gelding, he backed up his Breeders' Cup turf win by finishing just a neck second. Plenty of Japanese horses also in the mix in behind. Authority in third and Uberleben in fifth. Pile Driver was quite unlucky, I think, Chris, but the likes of Alan Kerr, Hookham, they ran okay in behind as well. So I think this could be a key race for some of the better middle distance horses around going into the rest of the season. What do you think?
Yeah, that would usually be the case, I think, not having stats to hand, but you know, you get lots of big name horses running in this race, and it's the start of the year. It doesn't always work out brilliantly for them. I think Hookham and Alan Kerr sort of fall into that category, that, you know, there are other prizes to be won. Yeah, Pile Driver was unlucky, just didn't have enough room in the final quarter mile. And apparently Frankie Dettori sort of got off and said to the trainer, had I got the split when I wanted it, we'd have won. You know, a hugely popular horse, you know, for William Muir and Chris Grassick to have. I think generally speaking, people love proper Group One horses to be, you know, in those yards that aren't always fighting over such races. And, you know, a Coronation Cup winner from last year and more to come. I'm just watching a replay now, and even sort of coming around the before they get to the final bend, Pile Driver's, you know, really pulling. I don't think they've gone quite quick enough for him, and certainly not for Ybir, who did Ybir things. You know, he was about two or three lengths off the second last runner, wasn't he, after about a furlong? And he finished really strongly down the outside, absolutely heartbreaking for anyone that's backed him at 7-2. And I see, so, you know, people blaming the jockey, but it, you know, I think there's a large aspect of this is just how that horse races, and, you know, sometimes he gets there and sometimes not, but it's you're just going to have to hold your water and wait to see what happens if you backed him or anything else.
Yeah, I'm going to be a bit cruel now, Chris. Obviously, your beer's a gelding, so he can't run in the arc. Are there any other races that he can't run in? Is that going to be a problem, do we think, for the rest of the season?
Oh, blimey. Let me just get out my flat programme book.
No, it's fine. Just off the top of your head, though, do you think we should allow geldings to run in the arc?
Well, there would be a stronger case for that if there had been any weakness to any arc in recent memory. But, I mean, it's always one of the strongest races of the year, isn't it? And so it should be. It doesn't particularly bother me. I mean, if geldings were bumping into that kind of restriction all over the place all the time, it would be a hotter topic. But it's a small number of the top class races, I think, that they're excluded from. And I'm sort of comfortable with the idea that the breeding industry needs these races to identify talent that can, you know, be used to make more talent in the future. They're, you know, he's a gelding for a reason, isn't he? If he was more tractable, then he'd still have all his bits. So I guess there's going to be a downside, isn't there, to making a decision like that, aside from the fact that he can't reproduce.
Okay. Robbie, a quick word on Frankie Dettori. He scooped another Dubai World Cup with Country Grammar for Bob Baffert. Bit controversial, this one, with Life is Good as well, the short price favourite he was beaten. He just didn't stay the trip.
Yeah, absolutely. Outstanding rider, isn't he? I'd have thought by now he might be showing some signs of slowing down, but not at all. Judging by this effort and the way he keeps going about his business. And the ammunition he's going to have for John Gosden and a lot of other top trainers this season, there's no reason why he's not going to add to his massive haul of Group Ones.
Very well said. And he always brings a lot of showmanship and sparkle to the game, does Frankie Dettori. Now, we're still not done with the jump season, would you believe? I know this podcast has been dedicated to the flat, but we're going to talk about the Scottish Grand National next, coming up on Saturday.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
We're going to go back over fences now, and it's to Ayr on Saturday that we go. The 3:35 is the feature, Coral Scottish Grand National Handicap Chase. How do they bet? Well, Boyle Sports have Kitty's Light as the 4-1 favourite, very short. And his stablemate, Win My Wings, is next best in for Christian Williams as well at 7-1. Stormy Judge, 9s. The Ferrymaster, 11s. History of Fashion, 12s. Fantastic as 14s, along with Right Place, Right Time and The Wolf. And it's 16-1 bar. Chris, different circumstances this year, as obviously the Scottish Grand National comes before Aintree. How much do you think that's impacted this year's potential field?
I think it probably has taken maybe two or three horses out of this race that might otherwise, at least have been left in at this stage. You've got the Grand National of a very similar type of horse just 1 week later. And So, you know, people are sort of keeping the dream alive for Aintree, I think, rather than going to Ayr first. Some years, when you get Aintree first, horses get balloted out at Aintree and then go to Ayr. There are some horses, I think, skipping the Ayr race in the hope they can still make the cut next week. And, you know, maybe they will or maybe they won't. And then you sometimes get horses that run in the Grand National and unseat at the third. And so they're still fresh as paint. And so they go to the Scottish National next week. You're missing all of that this time. But I think this is, I'm sure I remember John Randall, who's the expert on all matters historical relating to horse racing, saying in our paper, this is the second time the Scottish National has been held before the Grand National in the sort of collective history of those races, which goes way back more than, you know, like 150 years. And the only previous time was back in the 19th century. So I don't think this is going to be a problem that recurs all that often. It sounds as though you and I won't have to worry about it again in our lifetimes. Well, certainly not mine, maybe yours. So I think the Ferrymaster is interesting. People remember he was fourth in the race last year when Scottish horses were very much to the fore. Fewer chances for the home side this time, but he's a significant contender. I think he's actually dropped to a lower mark than he was then, but Sandy Thompson was saying in our paper the other day that he's really had a smoother run to the race this time than last year, and it's been all about the one race this season. Had wind surgery before his last run. Last run was more or less, I think, a build-up race to this. He hadn't been seen since Boxing Day. I'm sure he's going to run another good race. That's the Ferrymaster. He's 9 years old now, and looking at the betting, people are sort of seeing him coming. He's shortened into about 10, 11 to 1.
Yeah, he's a favourite of mine. Didn't quite see it out last year, but a year stronger and down in the handicap, his claims are pretty strong. You think I quite like Enrillo for Paul Nicholls. I don't know if he's definitely going to run here or he's going to go straight to the Bet365 Gold Cup at Sandown, but I think he's a classy horse and his mark's gone down in just a few runs this season. Rory, what's your view?
I quite like History of Fashion here. He was unseated. He unseated his rider quite a long way out in the Ida a couple of starts back. Way too far out to have sort of had an opinion about how he was going to fare. But then on his next start, he's gone and run third at Navan on soft ground. He doesn't like soft ground. And I remember looking at the prices there, he drifted from about 7 or 8 to 1. He went off at 20 to 1 in the end. And I don't think he was necessarily completely primed for that. He's been kept in this race. He's a stayer in the making. The ground's going to be much better. I think he makes quite a bit of bit with double figure odds, but I think I'd rather wait to see if he's declared, like, since he's not been jocked up yet. If he does turn up, History of Fashion for me. And, you know, we're going to have a big field here. So I'll wait until we've got 5 and 6 places on offer.
Yeah, valuable punting strategy, getting those extra places in a race like this. So hopefully a big field turn up, but nevertheless, Christian Williams is going to have a very good shout, you'd have to think, with the two of the top of the betting. Where is your best bet coming from this week? Chris, you've got a good record with these weekly naps. Who are you going to give for us this time around?
It's nice of you to say about the good record. The only one I can remember was the last one, which was ran like its legs were tied together. So sorry about that.
There's definitely been a few.
Frau Georgia is the name on my mind. She's a mare with Neil Mulholland. There's a little bit of, you know, feeling like this horse is owed a win, because it seemed to me that she was only beaten at Worcester in September by the fact that her noseband was slipping and sort of getting in her way. I think it slipped up her face and in her eyes at one point. And she was only beaten length and a quarter. I think she's well capable of winning off the sort of rating that she's got now on decent ground, which presumably is why Neil has given her the winter off. And now she's back at Uttoxeter tomorrow. That's the 4:45 Uttoxeter Tuesday. Frau Georgia, she's been chalked up at 6 to 1, I see, by the first firm to go up with prices. And against quite a few horses that have been on the go all winter to no great effect, I think that's not bad.
Fantastic, Chris. And what about you, Robbie?
I'm going to go for Soft Risk in the Scottish Champion Hurdle at 2:25 at Ayr. It's a little bit disappointing he got beaten on his last start. He was previously unbeaten before that, but I'm just not sure they quite went quick enough for him. And the horse who did beat him since day one of Donald McCain's has been very progressive this season. He's much more experienced. And understand he's quite highly regarded as well. I know Nicky Richards thinks the absolute world of this horse. He was making some big statements about that. He feels like he could be a potentially top class chaser. And he's only gone up £1 for that. He's off a mark of 124 now. He's opened up at a big price of about 16 to 1. He's a course and distance winner. Yeah, I could see Soft Risk going well in the Scottish Champion, and around 16s looks a big price.
Yeah, that race, of course, the prelude or one of the big events prior to the Coral Scottish Grand National on Saturday. So hopefully Robbie will be able to get a winner in the bag before the big handicap chase. That's all we've got time for today. Please rate, review and subscribe, and we'll be back again next week. See you next time.